It's one of the world's most watched television sports. And racing season is almost here.
Gentlemen, start your engines!
Now, how about ladies, start your engines? I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, we head to the racetrack to talk to the women of race car driving. We'll hear their stories of being behind the wheel, steering thousands of pounds of fast steel. The girls do it just as well as the boys. We'll hear from NASCAR superstar Jennifer Jo Cobb. Plus, more racing ladies, including a local team, chasing a dream of making it big on the racetrack, even after losing everything in a devastating fire. That's all ahead on Central Standard after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Paul Brown. Attorney General Eric Holder is back on Capitol Hill today over the Justice Department's flawed gun smuggling probe in which some guns disappeared in an investigation of gun smuggling.
Allowing guns to walk, whether in this administration or the prior one, is wholly unacceptable. I've been consistent on this. I've said this from day one.
But Representative Daryl Issa wants more documents about how the department handled congressional inquiries into the matter.
If you do not find a legitimate basis to deny us the material we've asked for, we will seek the remedies necessary to compel.
Issa says the Justice Department is engaging in a cover-up. Holder says that's not so, and he will consider the demand. Unemployment benefit claims are down for last week, more than analysts expected. And that's part of a continuing trend as hiring strengthens, however slowly. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke notes improvement in job market activity, spending, and production as he talks with Congress about the economy today.
The outlook remains uncertain, however, and close monitoring of economic developments will remain necessary.
Bernanke says the financial crisis in Europe still threatens U.S. recovery. Greece is struggling to avoid default. Spain, Italy, and other countries are dealing with massive debt as well. Continued weakness in the housing market shows up in mortgage rates. They're down even further this week, setting a ninth record low over the past year. Mortgage financer Freddie Mac says the rate's been 3.87% this week on a 30-year fixed-rate loan. Washington is on track to become the seventh state to legalize same-sex marriage. Austin Jenkins of the Northwest News Network reports the state Senate has passed a gay marriage bill on a vote of 28 to 21.
The debate in the Washington State Senate was impassioned but civil. Openly gay Democrat Ed Murray of Seattle set the tone when he defended those who opposed the bill.
They are not, nor should they be accused of, bigotry. Those of us who support this legislation are not, and we should not be accused of undermining family life or religious freedom.
The bill passed with the support of four Republicans. The Washington State House is expected to approve the measure as soon as next week. Democratic Governor Chris Gregoire has said she'll sign it into law. But opponents have vowed to put a repeal measure on the fall ballot. For NPR News, I'm Austin Jenkins in Olympia, Washington.
Demonstrators are back in Cairo's Tahrir Square today, this time over the riot at a soccer game in which more than 70 people were killed. Protesters claim police intentionally allowed attacks because one network of soccer fans was prominent in anti-government protests over the past year. Stocks up today in early trading on some basically good economic news. The Dow up 15 points. The Nasdaq is up 17. This is NPR. So far, 230 survivors have been pulled from the waters off Papua New Guinea after a ferry capsized and sank. But it's believed there were 350 people aboard. Stuart Cohen in Sydney reports Australia is helping in the search.
The ferry was on its way from the outlying island of New Britain to the Papua New Guinea mainland city of Ley when it went down about 9 miles off PNG's northwest coast. Australia's Maritime Safety Authority sent out a call for help with 8 merchant ships nearby responding. PNG's Prime Minister Peter O'Neill is promising an investigation.
We will leave no stone unturned. We cannot afford to continue to lose our people's lives. You know, sea transport is one of the most important form of transportation in the country.
The ship's owners say it went down quickly without sending a distress call, so they have no idea what caused the ship to sink. For NPR News, I'm Stuart Cohen in Sydney.
Now that Facebook has filed for an initial public stock offering, it's also laid bare its finances. They show the online social network is strongly profitable and getting more so. Its earnings have grown from $122 million in 2009 to $668 million last year. Colorado is exploring the toughest regulations in the country on trans fats in school food. A state house committee is expected to hear a bill today that would ban the fats which are known to promote artery disease. Several states already limit use of trans fats in school cafeterias, but they don't ban them outright. Research shows many, if not most, people in the U.S., including those relatively young, have some level of coronary artery disease. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Paul Brown, NPR News, Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Pajamagram Company, offering leopard hoodie footies and women's pajamas delivered overnight and on Valentine's Day at pajamagram.com.
Good morning, Kansas City. A common practice in stock car racing is called start and park. Starting and parking involves a car pulling onto a track for a few laps, then pulling into the pits so that the team collects the money for a back-of-the-pack finish. This stunt doesn't so much benefit the driver, but benefits the team, as a finish between 20th and 40th place doesn't make that much of a difference. But rather than start and park, rather than drive a few laps and quit in a 2011 race, Jennifer Jo Cobb, ever the competitor, simply refused to drive. She wanted to race, and she wanted to finish. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Today we examine the triumph and challenges of women race car drivers who are making inroads in a traditionally male-dominated field and seeing moderate success race by race. Joining us now is the aforementioned Jennifer Jo Cobb, a NASCAR driver. Cars and trucks, by the way. AJ Tice, another female race car driver, and we're revving into this conversation today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
So, Jennifer Jo Cobb, it's March of 2011. You refused to start and park. Tell us about that process and what the results for you were.
You know, this is something that is going to stick with me for a long time, for better or for worse. And the only thing that makes it bad is it was such a hurtful time in my life because when I walked away from that situation, it effectively ruined the entire rest of the 2011 season. But as with most things, short-term hurt produces long-term gain. And the respect from probably 70 to 90% of the media, the fans, and even NASCAR officials who don't necessarily condone the start and park procedure, the respect that I was able to gain from that situation far outweighs any of the bad consequences. And I just feel like in this journey to become a NASCAR driver, it has really, God is trying to tell me something. And I think that is stop partnering with people that you don't know and you can do this. And as my dad taught me a long time ago, if you're going to get anything done, you're going to have to do it yourself. So that was a situation where I tried to partner with another team. And it just didn't work out.
What ran through your mind that day? And tell us a little bit about start and park, just a little bit.
Sure.
From a driver's perspective.
You know, I have raced for a lot of team owners who start and park race cars. Our team has had to start and park a race truck or car in order to produce funding for the team. But I declared long ago that I, as a driver, would not do that. I got to be honest, I have a couple of last place finishes just on my own,
Right.
with that couldn't even beat the start and parkers in those races. You know, it's been a really tough road for me to get into the sport and to earn the respect that I really need from sponsors, fans, and media. And so I just made this commitment that it's something that I could never do. So as a driver, I won't do it, but I have a lot of friends who are drivers who do it. And so, there can be some good reasons behind it, but I just don't want my sponsors or my fans or the media to wonder, well, is she just starting parking this week or is she actually serious about racing this week?
It was a common practice. So what made you that day, before we get into why you like to drive and why you became a race car driver, what made you that day say, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to get my crew. I'm going to get out of here.
Well, I made that determination long before that day. And the team owner of that particular race car We had heard rumblings that not only was he going to make me start and park that race, but that he was not going to honor our contract after that race.
Wow.
And really, you know, sometimes I look back, I know in my heart that I did the right thing by just walking away. He waited until about 5-10 minutes before the national anthem to tell me. And I told him that, you know, that's not the deal. We have a contract. I don't do that. I'll keep this car safe for you. I won't stick my nose in any iffy situations. I won't go 3 wide off turn 4. You know, I'll keep it safe. I won't race as hard as I would like to, but I'm not going to start and park. And he said, I'm the owner and I can make NASCAR pull you in. And at that point, you know, I looked at my options and I thank God that the more devious options didn't pop into my head. You know, I just thought, hold your shoulders back and your head high and walk away. And that's what we did. And it created quite a scene. Nobody had ever walked away on the starting grid and left an owner with a race car while the engines are firing. And the funny thing is, my dad and of course some other people were like, well, you could have started and parked it right into the wall, or you could have forgotten to shift. And I thought, dang, why didn't I think of that? But ultimately, I absolutely did the right thing the right way and kept, you know, everyone out of danger.
And as time has proven, it's worked out better for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've gotten sponsors out of it, our fan base, our Twitter followers, our Facebook followers. We have a Facebook page for JJC Racing, a Twitter page, Jen Jo Cobb with one N. I have an imposter.
You
kind
do.
Kind of
you
weird
do.
Things happen.
That's common
there,
in the
yeah.
social media
I guess so.
world. How did you get started, Jennifer Jo Cobb, in driving?
I went to my first race when I was 2 weeks old.
Wow.
And my father started.
And you knew then?
No, not necessarily. My father started racing when I was 3 years old, so I just grew up around it. When I was about 8 years old, I decided that's what I wanted to do, but I never dreamed that it would get to this level at that time. At that time, I just wanted to be like my dad and race on the local tracks around Kansas City every weekend. But as I started to, dream and dream bigger and bigger, I wanted to be at the top. Ultimately, one day I want to compete in the Sprint Cup level.
Did your dad teach you how to drive and race, and is there a difference?
I think watching him all of those years, he's not the best teacher per se with his words, but his example is wonderful. And his example was, he didn't have the money to win races. He didn't have all of the equipment, but he followed his passion. He's 65 years old and still races, and he followed his passion, and he won races. He did more with less, and that's what our small team does now. We do more with less, and our goal, you know, to get better results, it takes the almighty dollar, and that's where organizations like Race for Girls are going to help not only my career, but other female race car drivers' careers, because I think there's just a perception out there that, you know, women have not been as successful as we'd hoped, but it's the cart before the horse type of thing. You have to have the funding to be successful, but you have to show results to have the funding. So a lot of the race car drivers that are successful are those drivers who had parents or somebody that could afford the best go-karts and the best, you know, the best equipment at the local level. And that's why I really like to take my message and show people that you can do more with less and don't give up, stick in there, and eventually that opportunity will come.
Let's bring in our other lady, AJ Tice. What is it about the sport of auto racing that made you want to do it for a living?
Well, I have a different story. I didn't exactly start out with my family racing. I'm actually a first generation racer. And at the age of 3, my dad happened to get a 4-wheeler. I decided at that age, that's when I wanted to race. And my parents figured, you know, I would just grow out of that stage. And I never really did. At the age of 11, I started racing go-karts. And ever since, I've been hooked on the sport and can't get racing out of my blood.
There's something that seems to be very common about the age of 3 here at sports cars. I guess you want to race at the age of 3. Jennifer Jo Cobb, you were on the truck driving circuit as well and still are. How is it different from cars, and which do you prefer?
You know, I used to, a year ago, I didn't have an answer to that. I absolutely prefer the trucks now. The NASCAR Camping World Truck Series, it's just a wonderful mix of big name drivers like Kevin Harvick and, dare we say it, Kyle Busch, who come down and race in our league. But also, there's a lot of drivers who, they don't really age out in the truck series. You know, you can actually do this a little bit more effectively, being a small team like we are. And I actually finished 17th in my first full-time season in the Truck Series.
Which is pretty good.
Well, it's the highest finish for any female driver ever in NASCAR in the points system since 1948 or 1949, so in the modern era, basically. And so racing is really, you are your brand, and so you have to talk about those accomplishments, but at the same time, that's not good enough. Our goal this year is to be in the top 10 in the Camping World Truck Series point standings, and obviously you're always shooting for that elusive race win. There's 43 or 36 drivers out there on the racetrack, and there's only one winner, so it's not like football where you have a 50% chance that your team's going to win.
Is driving a truck, aside from the competitiveness of it and aside from the success that you've experienced in the truck, is driving a truck fundamentally more exciting for you?
You know, it is, partly because we are more competitive on the truck side, but the trucks themselves are just so much fun to drive. I've had so many weird things happen to me just from a feeling perspective in the truck. When you're in a truck at Daytona or Talladega, you reach speeds over 200 miles an hour.
In a truck.
And when you go through those corners, When you enter the corner, the truck settles and you're flat foot all the way around the racetrack and you just feel it in the pit of your stomach, and it's the coolest feeling of the world. Now pack in 3 and 4 wide with other trucks at over 200 miles an hour and you feel completely safe in that situation. NASCAR has done so much for safety of the sport. There's just no other feeling in the world like it.
And it's not the same center of gravity as a car would be.
You know, it actually is.
It is.
The trucks, one thing about the Truck Series is the only real difference is aerodynamics. It's built upon the same type of a chassis. We use the same engine for our truck as we do for our nationwide cars. A lot of the same parts and suspension. So it's really, aesthetics and looks more so that makes the difference in the Truck Series.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on kcur.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. We're zooming through a conversation about female race car drivers with Jennifer Jo Cobb, a NASCAR car driver and truck driver, and AJ Tice, another female race car driver, a youngin' in the sport. What cars do you drive, AJ?
I drive B-Modifieds out at Lakeside Speedway. It's almost like the premier class out there, except we're limited on suspension and motor components. Other than that, they're exactly the same.
Tell us about those types of cars.
It is a homemade chassis for the most part. You have parts on it from all types of cars. We start with a Chevelle frame and then have Pinto spindles and S10 brakes. I mean, it is every car combined in one.
Were you ever discouraged to race? I know you caught the bug at age of 3, the tender age of 3, and you're now 19, right?
Yes.
Still a tender age. Have you ever been discouraged to race? Has anybody ever told you shouldn't be doing this?
I have been told that, but I've still proven my point that this is what I want to do and this is what I'm going to do.
What's it like to be behind the wheel in a male-dominated sport at this age?
For the most part, I haven't really had any problems. Most of the guys respect me out there because I show them respect when I race. And most of them see it as when I put my helmet on, I'm the exact same as them.
What would you say is unique about your career path so far in racing? Do you know any other females in your peer group, in your age group, that are trying to do it as well?
There are actually a few of us. I raced against about 3 girls every year at different tracks, but right now I'm the only female racer at the tracks in my class.
Do you ever talk with the other female racers about the commonalities in challenges that you face?
Actually, when I talk to the other females that are racing, we're still talking about the same exact thing as what the guys are talking about. We're talking about our cars,
the machines, right?
How we finished.
Kansas City, what do you think of the emergence of women in racing? And for all you female fans, what's it like being a fan of a male-dominated sport such as NASCAR? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. We're also on Twitter at KCURCST. Facebook is also an option. And if you want to give a chat to our female racers that we have in today, pointers, tips, give us a call, 816-235-2888. Let's talk about the role of sponsorship, Jennifer Joka. Very crucial for racing teams. What's the different approach in getting a sponsor for a female driver? You've been in this game for a while. What's the different approach?
You know, I have a lot of drivers who come to me and say, you know, how do you do it? How do I get a sponsor? Help me get a sponsor. And there is really no magic formula, but you have to know and study business and marketing, and you have to be willing to go out and do that yourself. And I know so many drivers who want it handed to them. I'm the track champion. I win all kinds of races. And the guy that finished fifth got the opportunity and I didn't. Well, the guy that finished fifth went out and made that opportunity happen for himself. And so that's the number one thing. But there are organizations, as we mentioned before, like Race for Girls, who has a specific goal of propelling the careers of female race car drivers. In 2012, they would like to distribute $1 million this year. And how they're going to do that is through customized corporate sponsorships. And the founder, Tracy Passantino, she can be found on the website, raceforgirls.com, to discuss that. But also, I love the power of the fans in racing. You can contribute $5 or more sponsorship just by going on raceforgirls.com, and that will help female race car drivers excel. Absolutely.
AJ Tice, what's been your experience with Race for Girls? How have they helped you advance your career? Because you're younger in your career than Jennifer Joka is.
I actually just met Tracy back in May of this year when I went to go watch Jennifer race at Iowa. And ever since, I've talked to her about my racing. I've run with her decals on my car for this past season. And when the fire came up, I had contacted her, and she put a blog on it about the Race for Girls website, which if you go to raceforgirls.com, you can go to the blogs and read Broken Heart of a Racer.
Yeah, we'll get more specifically into your travails with the fire later in the broadcast. But right now, Jennifer, what are the typical goals of a sponsor when you guys strike a deal with them? What do they come to you with in mind?
I think that, specifically NASCAR, my heart is with NASCAR, but any type of a race sponsorship, the best thing about it is it hits on so many different levels, from the marketing, the PR arm, a lot of race car drivers have organizations and charities, so there's a cause marketing effect there. Mine is Driven to Honor, which is a charity to salute female soldiers. We're all women in male-dominated environments, and I wanted to do something to acknowledge female soldiers. And then there's the hospitality arm, the spokesperson part of it, and I have worked for 20 years to hone my professional public speaking skills so that I can be a speaker at events for my sponsors. There's the power of NASCAR branding, you know, being on TV week in and week out, being mentioned in interviews such as this. I have a couple of local sponsors, Mark One Electric, that has really been they've really been loyal to me over the past 2 years, and we've had a successful and a successful relationship. And really what makes that work is they do other things to activate that sponsorship. So they are not necessarily they do want to grow their home side of it, but
you're not just putting the stickers on the car.
Not just putting a sticker on the car. You're actually hosting and entertaining those clients and key people at your suite at the racetrack or in the actual pit box with us. We have our sponsors' customers out actively involved in a pit stop by holding the pit sign. So there's so many exciting things that you can do with a race sponsorship.
Speaking of the pit stops and the pit itself, are there increasingly females on the pit crews as well? And if so, how does that interaction work?
Absolutely. And we had a female front tire changer. And when you look at a pit stop and you look at the front tire changer, they have to hop out in front of the race car and start on the right side of the race car. So she was absolutely phenomenal for us last year. And we really, she grew up as a tomboy, and we really took her because I did grow up a very girly girl. My mom had me in ballet and dance and gymnastics. And so we took Stephanie Russo is her name. Wonderful girl. She was only 19, 20 years old. And, you know, we took her and said, Stephanie, you can be a girl too. Let's paint your nails today. And so we had fun, you know, doing that and just basically saying, you know, be yourself, be a girl, but go out there and basically kick butt, do the best job that you can when you're at the racetrack.
So take us inside the pit real quick. How quick does it take to have a pit stop and get everything changed, tires, get everything checked?
Yeah, well, you know,
tell us how quick that is.
The top teams, you know, that can afford the former pro athletes, you know, their pit stops are down to 12 to 14 seconds or
wow.
less. Our team's pit stops, still a phenomenal, I'd say 15 to 18 seconds. And in that amount of time, they put two cans of fuel which weigh, I wish I knew right off the top what they weigh, but, you know, very heavy cans of fuel in the car or the truck, change all four tires, and then oftentimes, you know, they'll make a wedge adjustment, and you got to take care of your whiny driver, and I've done stupid things like ask for Jolly Ranchers on a pit stop.
Right, I was just going to ask you, what are you thinking about in that split second, in those 15 seconds, in those 20 seconds, as everybody else is doing their job, and you're standing still. What are you thinking?
Well, and you know, there's a rhythm, and so much of racing is a rhythm, and that's one of the number one things my dad taught me, is you have to get into a rhythm. And so there's a rhythm to everything, you know, changing a tire, and so you know when something's gone wrong without even knowing, because something is off in when that jack drops, and something is off, you know, in when that front tire changer doesn't come across your windshield and you don't, you know, see or hit the other side in the appropriate amount of time. So, you know, you're concentrating on things, but there's a duty of the driver too. You know, when you pull in, you've got to hold the brakes, you've got to make sure you don't stall out the engine. And then something that I learned early on that thank God somebody taught me, because I wouldn't know these things, is that when you actually put the car back into first gear to take off, it's going to move the rear tires just ever so slightly. And so you do that in the transition from them changing the right tire to the left tire. So you're making sure you've got a little bit of RPM so that it doesn't die. You're holding your foot on the brake so you don't hurt anybody. And then whenever they transition from the right side to the left side, you go ahead and put your foot on the clutch and put it into first gear, and then make sure you don't stall it when you leave pit road. And if you do stall it, hopefully it'll start. But, you know, very hot days, it reaches temperatures of up to 150 degrees or more inside the race car or truck. And by the way, the trucks stay much cooler than the cars do. And so you're asking for water, you're asking for ice.
Jolly Ranchers.
And every once in a while, if you have taken allergy medicine before the race and your mouth gets dry, Jolly Ranchers.
When you're out there on the track, and I'm going to go to AJ with this question too. Did you ever, either earlier in your career and still now, do you encounter drafting or bumping from male drivers trying to show off, maybe even other female drivers? Do you encounter that?
You know, absolutely. It's part of the sport. And that's the beautiful thing about stock car racing, you know,
right,
versus like IndyCar, is we can bump and grind and even get back at one another, you know, a lot of times just to let someone know you didn't appreciate what just happened. So, yes, that absolutely does happen. Sometimes it's just racing and sometimes it's just ridiculousness.
How can you tell the difference? If it persists, can you tell the difference? Or is it, if it's just a one-off time, you're like, oh, you got me, I'm going to get you back,
and it's
sportsmanship. But how do you know when it's out of hand?
Well, you know, your spotters know, the fans know. But I'll tell you, what my dad taught me early on is when they do that to you unnecessarily, and you do need to know the difference, you need to let them know that you don't appreciate it. And I had a situation with Kyle Busch. I felt like he was picking on me.
The Kyle Busch.
And he is a big, big name in the sport. I consider myself, you know, still up and coming and a relative nobody in the sport. And he's picking on me, and I got to stand up for myself. And we had a red flag at Daytona. He finished fifth. I finished sixth right behind him. And I pulled up next to him on the red flag, and I pointed to him just to let him know I didn't appreciate it. And oh boy, the TV cameras caught it. So then now you have even more controversy. You know, who does she think she is?
Did you guys
actually talk outside
of the car?
No, we have never spoke.
He was just like, whatever.
Yeah. And I think that's all over now.
Yeah.
But it kind of stemmed from a situation where he spun me for no reason at Bristol. And
then Daytona was a separate thing.
Have you noticed Bristol's pretty eventful for me?
Yes,
yeah,
I have.
Yeah. A little shy about going back this year.
AJ, how do you deal with the draft and bumping and grinding and all of that type of stuff? And what would you tell Kyle Busch?
I don't really know.
I don't think she can say that.
But how do you deal with the intimidation and the rough nature of being out there on the track with males and other females? How do you deal with it?
I don't know that I get intimidated much, but I strive more to try to beat them. Occasionally, you can tell when someone does something intentional just by looking over and seeing who's next to you. I have had that happen.
Can you see the whites of their eyes?
Not quite, but it's been close a couple times. Sometimes, you know, you really can tell when it's just a racing incident because someone will bump you once. I normally give it 1 to 2 times, and after the third time, I know it's intentional, and I'm going to prove my point as well.
And so you drive defensively, or do you drive offensively? Is it different in racing than say, on the interstate?
Well, you know, the biggest thing is at the level that AJ's at, I've started my career at Lakeside Speedway as well.
Right.
And that's where my dad taught me, you know, they, like she said, they bump you once might be a mistake. They bump you twice. You need to let them know you're not going to stand for it before you get to the main event at the end of the night. You need to take care of that early. And somebody spun me my first time in hot laps at Lakeside. I went after him in the heat race, and by the feature, we had it all worked out, and it was all fine. But at this level of racing, in the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series, the Nationwide Series, I'm playing with guys who have an unlimited budget,
right,
versus if one thing is damaged on my race car, that could put me out for 3 or 4 weeks. So I can't necessarily play that
you can't
tough
say
attitude.
Forget, yeah, you can't
like
say forget the race. Forget
to,
the race. I'm just going to go ahead and go after these guys.
Absolutely.
Turn this into a demolition derby.
Take care of your equipment first. But one day, that huge corporate sponsor is going to come along and say, you tear that race car up all you need to prove your point, do what you need to do.
Speaking of which, what are the considerable costs of being a race car driver? How expensive is it to keep up with the changing technology of the sport and to have the right fuel injectors, the right armor, the right funk on your chassis, mm-hmm, so
yeah,
to speak?
I'll just give you a few numbers that, you know, of what it takes to go racing. Our tire bill per weekend is anywhere from $6,000 to $10,000 per race, for practice, qualifying in the race. The engine bill, our engine bill is anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000. But we would, of course, love to get to that point where we're renting the $40,000 engines, which come with 40 more horsepower. So that's kind of where we are and where we need to be, and some of the differences between running in the front, you know, and then working your way up from the back. And so engines and personnel, travel, and tires are kind of our biggest expenses. But we accept sponsorship as low as $2,500 per race, and that would include hospitality and your name on the car or truck. At the local level, for AJ, I'm sure $500 or $1,000 for the entire season would make a big difference in her program. You know, for us, you know, $500 or $1,000 per race would make a small difference. But those larger sponsorships on the hood and the entire paint scheme, those are more along the lines of $40,000 to $50,000. And so we try to under promise, over deliver. You've seen Mark One Electric all over our race cars and trucks. And if they're going to come on board at a smaller level, we'll do everything we can, if we haven't sold that race car out, to just expand that sponsorship and give them more.
We've been talking with and about female race car drivers. Our guests are professional drivers Jennifer Jo Cobb and AJ Tice. Kansas City, how are you gearing up for racing season? Who are your favorite female race car drivers? And if you're a female fan of the sport, what's it like being a fan of NASCAR, Formula One, drag racing, whatever? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or at centralstandard@kcur.org. We're going to make a quick pit stop and pull over for a break. When we return, we'll hear about AJ's incredible story of what will forever be known as Black Friday. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. AJ Tice came up and is coming up as a female auto racer running late model cars on dirt tracks at Lakeside Speedway in KCK. Her racing operation was housed in a barn on some land out there. There was a fire. There was no insurance. In what will be known as Black Friday, most of AJ's critical equipment burned up in the flames. Now she is determined to race again for the 2012 season. Our guest in studio once again is the aforementioned AJ Tice, along with NASCAR driver Jennifer Jo Cobb. Right now we're going to hear AJ's individual tragedy and triumph in her resolve to get back on the road. So, AJ, tell us what happened with the fire. Take us there.
It was Black Friday. Me and my dad had actually been down in the shop that day working on vehicles. And around 5, we came up to eat.
So it was already Black Friday. It didn't turn into Black Friday after the fire. Explain what Black Friday was.
The day after Thanksgiving.
There you go. The shopping day.
Yes.
Right. So go on.
Me and my dad had gone up to the house to eat dinner. We were up at the house for about an hour, and finishing up dinner, my mom happened to look down at the shop, and by that point, it was completely engulfed in flames.
Do you know what happened?
We have no idea what started it, and probably will never know.
Now, what kind of equipment did you have that was destroyed in that fire? Tell us about it.
We had 3 race cars in the shop, 2 of which were mine.
Wow.
One of which was not mine. A guy that races Grand Nationals, I had to think about it for a minute because it wasn't my class, but he had just moved out into our shop, and we were racing as a team out of our shop. We had all of our extra equipment there, including motors, carburetors, all your spare parts that you can think of just sitting around, and it was all lost, including tools, our car lift, just everything.
Now, was it that insurance wouldn't cover anything for racing, or they wouldn't cover anything after the fact, or you didn't have insurance? What was the problem?
Insurance will not cover anything pertaining to racing, so the cars were a loss, all the equipment.
Why did they tell you they wouldn't? Is that just the standard practice for insurance? Or?
Yes, it's very hard to get insurance on race cars, even if it is just for theft or fire, they will not cover it.
What are some of the things that you're doing to get back on track now? I mean, obviously that was a very devastating experience. What goes through your head now as you look to recover in the 2012 season?
I had looked at possibly getting out of racing, as this was a thing to tell me just quit, but I had enough people behind me telling me that is not the right decision. Go ahead and keep up with the racing. I have had someone donate a chassis for me by the name of Randy Moore. He gave myself and Luke a chassis. We are having a benefit coming up February 25th at the Claycomb Community Center. It's from 7 to midnight. We're having a band play, and it's $10 to get in. So we're hoping to raise some money there for both of us to get back on the track.
Have you been out on any runs since the fire? Have you driven since the fire?
No, I have not.
What do you think it's going to feel like when you finally do? Even if it's just a test run, even if you're just driving around the track, what do you anticipate then?
I anticipate it to be the same. I mean, you really never lose the feel of how a race car should feel underneath you. It may be a little different as far as mindset, as I have to go out this year with something to prove that I am there to stay to race.
And what has the support been like from your family and friends after this happened?
I've had a lot of support from family, friends, as well as fans, because I have fans from all around the U.S., and they've been asking how they can help and where they can send money to be able to try to get me back out on the track for this season.
What made you say, because obviously this is very discouraging, and it's quite an omen to have everything destroyed. What made you say, nope, I'm going to stay at it? What was the moment? What was the spark that made you say, I'm going to keep at this?
I think it was the fact that I've been racing for 9 years now, that I've made it this far, and I cannot give up.
Jennifer Jo Cobb, when you hear about a story like this, what does that say to you and your resolve? And is the ability to get support as a female race car driver still a tough go?
Absolutely it is. And, you know, I don't want to be misleading. It's tough for any race car driver. It
right.
absolutely is. And it's not just female drivers. But when I look at AJ and her situation and her resolve, it makes me smile. And I see a lot of, you know, I never had to endure that type of a tragedy with my equipment. But there were so many times that I thought, is this a sign? Is this something telling me to give up? But every single time that I got so close to that point of giving up and I overcame and got back up on my feet and went at it again, I got so much further along. And when I give speeches, you know, I talk about some of those specific stories. And I think, you know, I look at what's happening now. I'm literally living the life of my dreams. And I'm so grateful to be doing so. But there were so many opportunities, you know, so many failures along the way. And I think that that is just, you know, when you look at great leaders, when you look at great characters, you know, of our nation, you see that they had to overcome that failure time and time and time again. And if you don't know Abe Lincoln's story, AJ, you know, read a biography on him, you know, learn that story. And, you know, kind of a bad ending, huh? No, I'm kidding.
Right, a little bit.
But you know what? You know, death is not the enemy. You know, it's ultimately the things that he was able to accomplish for our country and the things that he did and all the failures that led up to that. And so I think that you can ultimately learn to see your failures as opportunities. You're going to survive.
It's interesting that you bring up that phrase, death is not the enemy, because you are in a sport where you're driving a piece of machinery at 200 miles an hour. What makes you go out there with that death is not the enemy attitude?
Well, you know, absolutely my Christian values, you know, my belief in Jesus Christ. And, you know, knowing that I have a friend whose his mother passed away about 10 years ago and his father's somewhat on his deathbed right now. And I said, you know, this is just short term. When he goes, it's short term. You know, think about eternity with him. They're all believers. So I have a strong faith in Jesus Christ. And so, you know, it takes away the element of fear. And as I said, you know, I'm not afraid of dying in a race car. NASCAR's done so much to upgrade the safety of our sport, but you absolutely have to respect that it can happen. But we don't think about that at all. We don't fear that.
We learned that even from Dale Earnhardt's situation, a master driver, a legend in the sport, and, you know, what took him from the sport. AJ, how do you control your fear, if you have any? You seem pretty fearless.
A lot of us will just, we know that we can, or something can happen to you, but we put that in the back of our mind and focus on what needs to be done at that moment.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on kcur.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. We're racing through a conversation about female race car drivers with Jennifer Jo Cobb, a NASCAR driver, and AJ Tice, another female driver who has overcome myriad obstacles to stay on the track and get back on track for the 2012 racing season. And joining us now is another driver, Shay Holbrook. Shay Holbrook, welcome to Central Standard.
Hey, how are you? Thank you for having me.
No problem. Now, racing season is upon us. What do you get ready to do when you race? What is your regimen before you race? And we'll begin with Shay, and then we'll go around the horn here and find out what everybody's ritual is before a race. Shay, how do you prepare?
Sure. Well, first off, I want to say hey to the girls. I know these girls very well, and I after listening to AJ's story, I actually didn't know that, so... it's very, you know, when we were talking about race car drivers and how we prepare and overcome obstacles, you know, props to you, AJ, for getting back on the bus and chasing your dream down. And Jen, I know that actually we don't know each other that well, but I feel like I know you and you're my sister with Tracy's help from Race for Girls. So it's just really inspirational to hear other women on the radio and chasing their dreams. But what do I do to get prepared for racing season? Typically, I'm always in my workout regimen, but I'm really hitting the gym very hard, and I don't know about the other girls, but I'm really not for watching the video and working out, but I must say that P90X is awesome.
Shout out to the P90X. what other preparation, is required?
I am hooked on that, but I do a lot of mental training and simulator time on iRacing. It's a really good prep for what to expect at the racetrack, and year after year, they seem to get better and better and better, the simulators. A lot of mental strategies. I also spend a lot of time in the race shop. I like to be, you know, I'm still a full-time college student. I'm expected to graduate in May, but I spend as much time as possible at the race shop or around the racetrack because it really keeps you on your A game and chasing after your goals and what needs to be done.
Jennifer, what do you do to prepare? What other preparation is required beside driving test runs, physical fitness regimens? What do you undergo?
Yeah, like Shay, you know, I love to get to the gym and work out, and there's so many benefits to that. You know, you don't necessarily have to be super strong to drive a race car, but you have to be able to endure. And if you have, you know, just from the pure repetition, if you have a muscle that's, you know, cramping or talking to you, well, that's taking your mind, your mental focus away for just a split second, and you just cannot have that. In the gym, I really like to lift weights. I really am a free weight lifter, but I do also like I like the classes, like the Body Blast. I'm a member of the YMCA, and I love to go to the KCK location and work out where I'm from. And so, you know, not just that, but my preparations are a little bit different because I have a lot of responsibilities. I own my own race team. I have employees. We have a shop, and we just spent the past 2 weeks acquiring equipment, setup plates and stomp shears and all of that good stuff. And so I think for me this year, what I'm really focused on is keeping our team focused on our goals, you know, keeping our team communicating and getting things better conditions in the shop for the guys. So whenever they need to fabricate a part for the race car, they're not out there with, you know, scissors and a drill. They've actually got the right equipment to do that. And believe it or not, for the past 2 years, that's what they had. So that's the big part of it.
AJ, what do you do to prepare for a race?
I work out as well. I've been getting back into a regiment. Other than that, it's just spending time in the shop. And we don't really have a race day ritual besides for we cannot eat chicken. That is just terrible
no
luck.
No chicken before you get into the car. Are you spending time with pit crews or still spending time in the shop as you mentally prepare to try to get back on track, AJ?
We have been trying right now. It's really hard because we don't have any equipment. We don't really have anything to work on. So that part's difficult, but I am ready to get back into a shop and try to get into a routine of working on the cars again.
We do have a caller from Overland Park. Gary, welcome to Central Standard. Gary?
Hello.
You're on the road. Sounds like you're on the road, Gary.
I am on the road. I just had a question, I guess mostly for Jennifer because of the different levels of racing she does. You were talking earlier about the similarities between the Nationwide car and the trucks. And then including up to the Sprint Cup, can you tell me what the different characteristics are as far as being aero loose with the truck versus a Twisted Sister kind of car versus a Car Tomorrow kind of car?
A Twisted Sister kind of car. Gary, you sound like you might be asking questions of how to do tricks right now on the road.
I'll tell you, Gary, the Camping World Truck Series, those trucks are so aerodynamically different, and that's what makes it so fun because you can do so much more with a truck. I had to learn things like if you – and oh, my goodness, you have to reteach yourself so many times. But on a mile-and-a-half track – in my entire first year in the rookie meetings, they had to remind us of this. If you get too close to another truck's right rear, if you're passing on the outside or even getting passed by somebody who's on the outside, it will take the air off the spoiler and make the truck so, so very loose. And that's what happened to me at the Kansas Speedway a couple years ago. I actually was the one doing the passing. I was on the outside. And you've just got to be very careful. And I kind of learned, you know what, don't pass going into a corner on the outside unless you absolutely have to. I did it the lap before, and I passed three trucks and came out the other side. So I thought, hey, that was successful. I tried it again, and it didn't quite work out that time. So you learn things like that when you're coming to pass a truck on the inside, coming off of turn two or off of turn four. If you're right in line with that truck, you will push, coming off the corner, end up in the wall. So you have to hang your nose out. You have to hang the left side of your nose of your truck out toward the left so that it hits some clean air so that you don't have that push coming off the corner. So there's a lot of nuances like that with a truck that there will not be with a car. So the truck series is actually, I believe it's the best place to go to prepare for the Sprint Cup series because you just learn so much more about aerodynamics. It's just so much more compounded. And I think that, you know, your champion of the Camping World Truck Series last year, Austin Dillon, is going to be one heck of a Sprint Cup driver because he didn't spend so much time in Nationwide. That's where he'll go this year. But he's got such a strong truck background. And I really think that it takes a lot more to drive one of those trucks.
So, Gary, when you're out there on your commute, watch your inside turns and watch your outside turns. What are the challenges of dealing, Shay, with female images in racing? With Danica Patrick, we saw there was sort of an objectification later on in her career, the pressure to be tough and sexy from sponsors or agents or team owners. Do you encounter any challenges with image, Shay?
Well, there's a positive and there's a negative side to that for women, I think. And, you know, to be honest, I do get the question a lot, you know, what's it like being a female in a male-dominant sport? And my answer to that is I absolutely love it. I mean, if being a chick and having long hair and being able to talk on the radio is a good thing for me, then so be it. But, you know, there are certain challenges I think that women in any type of sport in a male-dominant industry have to overcome, and we just have different obstacles. Just like men have obstacles to overcome also, but we have different ones. And I think the main thing is that fans and the media and sponsors, they actually expect more out of the female in the race car than a male. Whereas if AJ, Jen, or I, if we have a not so great of a weekend and we finish in the back of the pack due to, you know, car preparation or something broke or we just simply had bad luck or a tire went down or something, you know, we're looked at as, oh, the girl finished in the back or the girl didn't finish as well. And I think that's something that we really have to prove, and that's why we always have to be on our A game and finishing, whether it be top five is your goal or top 10 or whatever it may be. I just think that a lot of people expect more out of the female driver than the male, because we're not the norm. There's, you know, I've been in this for 5 years now, and I don't have the traditional history of, you know, grandpa and dad passing the wheel down to son, in our case, daughters. I started literally 5 years ago and jumped into an industry and didn't know nothing about it. Watched NASCAR every once in a while on television, and I'm not even racing, climbing the NASCAR ladder. I run a sports car type vehicles in road racing. The series that I race in is called Pirelli World Challenge. It's one of the most prestigious types of sports car racing in North America. And you know, a lot of people say, well, do you think, you know, Danica Patrick has helped you, or are you being overshadowed? And I don't really know how to answer that, because, to be blatantly honest, is I envy her. She's in a great position. I wish I was in her position. But I'm really fortunate to have the opportunity this year I picked up a new sponsor called TrueCar.com, and they're putting forth their Women Empowered initiative, and it's really awesome. There's other women on board, and, you know, hopefully we can get these girls on the radio on board with them also. So it's just, you know, it's very bittersweet, and to be honest, you know, with women in racing, you either love us or hate us, and I think a lot of people love us.
Jennifer, do you get the same, a woman has to do more?
You know, I don't feel the pressure to do more, but what Shay is saying is absolutely correct. What happens is there's you know, 99% of the field is comprised of male racers, and there's one or two female racers. That's just the, you know, the facts and the statistics out there. And so it's great, because you can tell your sponsor, you know, you bring something so different to the table that's going to draw attention. But at the same time, if, like Shay said, if I finish 30th, if a guy finishes 30th, nobody knows his name, maybe. Nobody cares. Nobody pays special attention. But as you're scanning those results and you see a woman's name, then you're like, whoa, oh, gosh, she's in the back. Or you have parents sit in the stands and they tell their son or their daughter, hey, that's a girl out there. And they keep an eye on you. They keep an eye out on, you know, the cup drivers that I race against, and they keep an eye out for their favorite driver, and then they keep an eye out for the girl. And so if there is a lack of success, it's absolutely highlighted. But at the same token, you know, making history and, you know, being the highest finishing woman at Daytona and a NASCAR event and the points thing and all that, you know what, that also can make up for it. And so your successes are highlighted, but in racing, there's going to be a lot more non-wins than there are wins for just anybody. And so people are going to notice that as well.
AJ, what are your thoughts?
I agree. You know, when women are in the back, everyone still knows their name. They will see your ups and downs of racing. But when you are up front, you get that much more noticed about it. And people are more likely to come down and talk to you compared to the guy next to you if he wins. You bring in a lot more fans.
We're going to go around here right now with all of our ladies in the studio and our guest, Shay Holbrook, who's joining us from Orlando, Florida. And we'll start with you, Shay. If you had to speak right now to a little girl who's growing up, wants to be a female race car driver, what would you say to her? Let's begin with you, and then we'll go around. Shay, what would you say to her?
I would tell her, you know, there's a quote that I've picked up about 5 years ago that I really live by now, and that's, fear is a state of mind, and will is an action taken. And I say that because for being a little girl, you know, whatever age you are, they might not realize the obstacles that they might have to overcome being a female in a male-dominated industry. And for her, it's so simple, and it's so, you know, she has more enthusiasm than anybody. And that's what I love about little girls at the track. And to be honest, I find that the little girls like it more than the little boys. They ask questions that I wouldn't even think that they would process, because I feel like the little girls really sit there and think, why do you wear those gloves, or why are you putting a sock on your head, or, you know, those types of things that they really notice. And I would tell them, if they think that they like this, if you can dream it, you can achieve it. You just have to stick with you have to set goals, because if you don't have goals, you don't have anything to achieve. Set goals. And the other thing is you have to have, you know, for me, I'm very fortunate, it sounds like these other women are too, to have support from your family and your friends. because it really starts with your family and friends and building a foundation for yourself and getting, you know, meeting people in the industry. And at the same time, you've got to be having fun. If you're not having fun, then why do it?
AJ?
I agree completely. I love when the little kids come up and tell me that they want to be a race car driver. I tell them, you know, go tell their parents. Really try to get into racing if that's what they want to do, because it is a great family sport.
Jennifer Jo Cobb.
If it's really what you want to do, never, ever, ever give up. And so many times throughout the past 20 years that I've been racing and ultimately made it to the top levels of NASCAR, I felt like a mouse in a maze. You'd get a run and you'd feel like you were getting somewhere, and then there'd be a wall right there to stop you. And you just have to get back up, turn around, and find another way through that maze. And so you just can never give up and always be looking for another way to go about that opportunity.
Some inspirational proclamation from our female race car drivers we have here in the studio today on Central Standard. We do have a caller, Ken from Liberty. Ken, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you, Kojo. And, I race video games, and we get a full suite of tuning in the video game for, tuning the race cars. We get to race sprint cars and all this, or sprint cup cars and all this. I'd ask your guests, could they give me like tuning theory behind how you set up for a big oval versus how you set the car up for like a road circuit, or maybe there's a difference between like an oval like Indy or an oval like Daytona or Kansas City, and just like general suspension settings like roll bars and this sort of thing.
All right. It may not be the same as a video game, I'm assuming, but let's go ahead and humor Ken on this.
We don't have time to go through everything that you need to know to get a proper setup. But let me just teach you a couple of fundamentals, okay? Your front springs, you definitely want to be coil bound if you can make that happen. And so you probably want something between, 325 and a 350 front spring. Your rear springs, what we're finding, if it's the new style cars, like the nationwide cars, traditionally speaking, and car guys and girls out there, this is going to blow your mind, and oh my gosh, it blew my crew chief and I's mind when we learned this last year. Traditionally speaking, the larger the number of spring is going to make that corner go toward the wall. So you put a bigger spring in the right rear, it's going to make the right rear go toward the wall, in essence making the car or truck looser. And if you put it in the left, it's going to make it tighter. But what we've learned is the difference between mechanical setup and aero setup. And that's the trickiest part about it. And you've got to watch it, because in order to tighten up our race car this year, we actually had to go with a higher right rear spring to get the blade in the air to make it aerodynamically tighter. So in the rear, I'd try like a, probably an 800 and a 300.
Instructional proclamations from Jennifer Jo Cobb, a NASCAR racer. We also have AJ Tice, a young racer here in KCK. And joining us on the phone from Orlando, Florida is road racer Shay Holbrook. Ladies, thank you for coming and good luck this season.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And tune in tomorrow for the Walt Bodine Show as the food critics give you a taste of local desserts. Today's show was produced by Tamika Weatherspoon. Central Standard's regular producer is Andrea Salenzi. Our executive producer is Bill Anderson. Kim Noble is our announcer. Emily Mutert manages our website. Central Standard's intro theme music is by Miles Bonney. What you're hearing now is the outro by The Will Knots. Up to Date is next with a look at Kansas City historic landmarks. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.